News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to Sound Bites. This is America's longest running computer show. Call the show now, 222-1180. The Choice One toll free line, 1-800-295-1180. Or star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Now, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Sunday, the 24th of July, Anno Domini 2005. And you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And we'll be bringing you all kinds of interesting things, news, views, stuff you can use. We'll be talking about some cool things. We'll take some phone calls. It'll all be good. It'll all be good.
Sure as heck hope so.
I sure as heck hope so. And I'd like to talk a little bit first. I'm going to start this week.
Whoa!
I'm going to start this.
What's the occasion?
Your birthday? Sunday.
No, your birthday's not until September.
All of our birthdays are toward that end of the year. So here it is. I want to talk a little bit about Microsoft security. Very important stuff went on this week. There are flaws in the remote desktop protocol and in Internet Explorer, and there's a new IM worm targeting MSN and AOL. Of course, AOL is not a Microsoft product. All the rest are. The remote desktop protocol is the thing that lets you work somebody else's desktop from inside your machine.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, let's
great
say...
great for tech support people.
Yeah. Yes, let's say I'm a tech support guy. You call me up and say I'm having problems with this. Hold on, I'll remote desktop in. I'll see what I can do to help you out, blah, blah, blah. Unfortunately, there's a flaw in that which lets attackers remotely crash computers. Originally, they thought this flaw was part of XP, but it appears to be in 2000, XP, 2003, the whole kit and caboodle. So that's bad. There's a flaw in Internet Explorer's image rendering capabilities that allow attackers to execute code remotely. So that means they can pretty much do anything. This is a critical problem. Yeah. 4 proof of concept images are available on the web by a specific consultant who I will not name, so you don't go out and find them. Each of these have the potential to crash IE6, which is, of course, the latest version of the browser, even if it's been patched with Service Pack 2. There is, for those of you who are instant messaging fanatics, there is a new IM worm. Both MSN Messenger and America Online are being targeted by malicious messages. It's called Curvo. It's a Trojan called Curvo. It's an instant messages that purports to come from one of your friends, somebody in your friend or buddy list. It contains a link to a website. If you click it, bang, you are caught. So let me suggest that, A, you keep everything up to date. But, in fact, there are no patches yet for these flaws. So if you have, if you are indeed using Internet Explorer, either don't go anywhere on the web, turn off images, or download Firefox.
There was a Trojan horse came out for Windows this week, masquerading as an iTunes update.
Yep.
Yes.
So you know you've made the big time when someone tries to fake you. And then the big Microsoft news, Microsoft Vista.
Vista.
It's no longer Longhorn. Codename Longhorn.
Well, going back, though, to the spamming and everything else, there's another new company out in Blue Security. Yeah. They're joining the forces, both AOL has been, you've seen the ads on TV right now, how they're trying to fight spam and everything else. Because spamming is becoming more popular than viruses. I'm seeing fewer, newer viruses come out.
Well, because the people who create spam get paid for it.
Exactly.
And most of the mail servers are catching viruses before they're delivered, so there's less incentive to write a virus.
Yeah. And, well, like Nick said, they didn't get paid for it, whereas the spammers, they get money from it because of identity theft and everything else. Granted, these various companies like Symantec, AOL, Microsoft, they're all trying to do their part in blocking it, but this Blue Securities is another company that's going to be offering a free program, which is part of the community that works on crippling any websites that are run by spammers. because they know the sites where these are coming out of. So they're joining forces now to even make some of the spam that you're already getting, which hopefully in most cases is reduced.
Well, is this part of that deal where people are automating products that reply to spam?
Yeah.
So that it, you know, it fills out all the forms, it does
boom,
everything.
And
yeah, I'm not sure how legal that is. I don't know that I'd want to be part of it, but it is out there.
Well, no, this one, though, is just to sit there and most spam tools filter out most of the known sites. This one is even going after more of the sites that they know are literally spam-producing websites.
Yeah.
So they're attacking those. And, I mean, the more folks that we can get to fight, well, it's just like AOL. Back in the day, I mean, you used to get so much junk mail. From so many folks, I mean, I could get, you know, 500-600 within a couple hours,
right,
and it was all junk.
Right.
Well, AOL, responding to their subscribers, are now filtering out most of that.
We at work, we have our own web server, and we've delivered 1 million pieces of mail since the web server came up and thrown away another 2 million.
Mm-hmm.
That were spam.
Yep. See, that's the hard problem. You can throw away 99.99% of the spam, and you're still going to get 1,000.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah,
it's pretty amazing. We'll come back and talk a little bit more about Vista in particular shortly, but we're going to go quickly to the phones for the moment. We have Linda from Greece who can't seem to get her iPod to play songs. Welcome,
yes.
Linda.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. I got a new computer.
Oh, good.
AMD Athlon 64-bit processor number 3200.
Right.
Okay. I have an integrated sound card.
Mm-hmm.
I have a separate video card.
Mm-hmm.
I have 200 gigabytes of memory, 200 gigabyte hard drive, 512 memory. I downloaded iTunes, bought some songs. Every time I play them, they're crackly, they're scratchy. I can't understand what they're saying. What
is this, playing them off of the iPod or playing them on your computer out of iTunes?
Playing them out of iTunes.
Ah.
I'm sorry. I said the wrong thing.
Not a problem. Not a problem. As long as we got it right. Are other things crackly?
No. I play my songs through Music Match, and I have no problems whatsoever. It's just iTunes. And I had iTunes when I had my old computer. And my other computer, and I had no problems there. It's since I've downloaded it, I've done it 3 times, and I get the same thing every time.
Is it just music that you've purchased at the iTunes Music Store, or also CDs that you've imported?
Both.
Sounds like an interaction between iTunes and the audio driver.
Yeah,
it sounds.
What
like
you
this.
Might want to do, because you said you've got integrated sound on this machine.
Yes.
What you might want to do is look for some updated drivers for your sound card.
Okay.
In other words,
you'd have to go to the motherboard manufacturer since it's an integrated audio card.
Okay. Let me ask you a question. Would it be easier to get a separate sound card?
You could definitely go to a separate sound card and get better quality.
And you get better quality sound.
You know,
well, then
you
it's a little trickier because then you have to turn off the internal sound card.
Yeah, but that you can do easily in the BIOS. And if you want to, say, like a Sound Blaster, AUGI-2, I mean, they're a nice quality. They're sort of the middle of the road for you folks are playing with music, maybe mixing your own. I mean, it's not the quality that if you're going to produce your own that you'd want. You'd want to go up to the platinum. But the AUGI-2 is a very good sound card, great quality. I mean, if you get this speaker system, say, you know, you got 4 speakers and a subwoofer, it works fantastic.
How fast a processor did you say your computer had?
3200.
3200.
So that's one of the things that iTunes does is it uses the AAC compressor, which is part of the Dolby Super Whiz Bang. Try importing a song or two as an MP3, and you can change that in your preferences. And then you can see whether it's the compression option or something in the audio driver.
I already did that because Music Match, from what I understand, only plays MP3.
Right.
So I took them from my folder and downloaded them to iTunes, and I still have the same problem.
Well,
Linda, we seem to have another caller on the line who thinks he's got a solution to your problem, and he's. So we're gonna move over to him and see if Jim.
So listen in.
So listen and keep in listening. Jim seems to have a solution for your problem. So hold on a second there, Linda. Jim.
Yeah. Hi.
Welcome.
I had the same problem with iTunes.
Yeah.
and the iTunes support site, if you go down under Frequently Asked Questions,
yeah,
one of the items there is the music is scratchy and distorted and doesn't play clearly.
Mm-hmm.
And they recommend you go out to their real player and download a driver upgrade from them. And so if you go to the Frequently Asked Questions under iTunes, you can find, I believe, the solution to our problem there.
Yeah, we're looking for it now. Yeah, and that's one of the issues that we've seen quite frequently under Windows is that you've got the Windows Media Player, the Music Match, the Real Player, the QuickTime Player, and they all fight each other.
Mm-hmm.
They all want each one, and it's not just the Apple stuff, it's the Real and Windows stuff. They each one assumes they're the only player and fights off all the other ones.
And so what Jim is saying makes sense. Even though the problem appears in iTunes, the cause of the problem could be the real driver.
Play, yeah.
Because those things all sit in memory whether you want them there or not.
Oh, yeah.
Excellent. Thank you,
Good
Jim.
Good luck. Thanks, guys.
I appreciate that. I appreciate that very much. See, this is not, I've said this before, my favorite part of this show is when other users call in and answer problems. This guy didn't even wait for us to finish talking to Linda. He was in with the answer. I love to hear that. Thanks, Jim.
And I'll get that link posted on our website as soon as I find it.
There you go. And we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Lint, and me, Nick Francesco, and all of you on the greatest computer show in the known universe, Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Guys can answer your questions. Back to more Sound Bites on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
I'm Nick Francesco, David Aronofsky.
I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbites. Before I go on to our next call, Steve has yet another answer for Linda from Greece.
Actually, it just struck my mind as I found this tech note on how...
And you know how hard it is to hit something that small.
Yeah. One of the problems that you can run into in iTunes is that there's an equalizer function. I'm just ignoring you.
Thank you.
There's an equalizer function where you can set it for high bass or classical or jazz or hip-hop or whatever. And that's a button in the bottom right corner of the iTunes window. If you screw up those sliders, you can make your sound really, really bad.
That's true.
And other sounds from other programs work fine.
Because the equalizer is specifically to iTunes.
Yeah, so open your equalizer and set it to one of the presets, you know, for small speakers, or center them all on the slider bar.
Yeah, the basic idea is you look at all those things and think, oh, if they're all up at the top, that's the best.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not. An equalizer doesn't necessarily mean higher is better.
I believe you can go in there and just click on the defaults, and it'll go back.
Yeah, there's a normal.
Well, that's what he's saying. There's a normal and a bunch of others. So try that first, Linda, before you do anything else. That might solve the problem right there. Excellent. We're going to go back to the phones, and we're going to talk to Roger from Rochester, whose monitor is talking to him. Welcome, Roger. What's your question?
Good morning.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a compact monitor. It's about perhaps 4 years old, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a real nice one. It's probably one of their best. But when I do a total shutdown, and this doesn't happen all the time, but when I start up the computer again, the monitor will sit and click for sometimes 30 seconds and sometimes as long as 2 or 3 minutes before it actually kicks on.
Yep.
And then other times it won't do it at all. It'll just kick right on. And it's not consistent all the time, but yep, it does it. And I don't, even with a normal Windows shutdown, and I have XP, I have all the latest everything.
Mm-hmm.
And my computer is a good one, and the monitor was probably at the time one of the best made.
Here's what you're hearing. What that clicking noise is, is, you know, you bought the computer and the monitor at the same time, or is the computer newer? But anyways, what it is it's literally that clicking you're hearing is it's trying to sync up to your video card. And it's trying to find a sync rate, you know, that it can work with in your box. So that clicking is, it, you know, trying different refresh rates, different megahertz, and syncing that out. Now, right now, with all the hot weather and everything else, you know, this has been acting up on a lot of machines, you know, that can make it squirrely. So basically what it is it could be your monitor getting ready to go. You might want to have it checked out. I know you said it was a good one, but even they wear out with the heat and everything else, and it's having problems syncing up with the video card on your computer.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. We've got news, with the great Joan Hildebrandt coming in. And on the other side of the news, we're going to talk a little bit more about the brand new Microsoft Vista. And I'm going to steal a joke from my friend Bob from Hawaii. But we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Answering your computer questions for over 15 years. It's Soundbites with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton. And Nick, can I just say, you do one amazing air guitar.
Thank you so much.
Seriously.
Wait a minute, though. No, I have to ask the question, is it air guitar or air banjo?
That at the moment was air guitar following the song. That was normally I do air banjo.
Yeah, because he plays the banjo real well.
You really do not.
He does.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Yeah, I used to actually make a living playing the banjo.
Really?
Yeah, before the arthritis set in.
Well, I was going to say...
I can't even... Now I can't... I've so lost my chops since the arthritis hit. But I used to play the banjo all the time. There we go. I can play that. I love that.
The theme from Beverly Hillbillies and the theme from Deliverance are the two songs every banjo player has to learn.
As long as you know... Everybody thinks you can play the banjo.
Now, not only is he a computer expert, but he's also a hillbilly.
I'm a child of the I'm a child of the television generation. I know television theme songs.
Oh, yeah. Right. But in terms of what I used to do, I played the banjo a lot. I used to play classical banjo. Back before microphones were popular, were available before any sort of sound amplification.
We didn't have electricity in the olden days.
That's right, doggone it. We had to walk across the room to turn on a light. uphill, both ways. They used to have banjo bands, banjo guitars, banjo basses, banjo everything, because the banjo body amplifies the sound. So they used to have real banjo bands playing classical music.
Yep.
Okay, nobody cares. Let's move on. Before we get back to the phones, let me give you our numbers, by the way, because I don't remember that they did that on the last go-round. Our phone numbers, if you're in the 585 area code, the number is 222-1180. If you're outside the 585 area code, please feel free to call us on the Choice 1 toll-free line, 800-295-1180. If you're a Verizon Wireless customer, it's simply *1180, and you will get to us. Now, before we do get back to the phones, I want to talk to you. We have a website of the maybe every week-ish. Website of the week-ish.
Yep.
And I have a great website this week, I have to say. I love this website. It's openclipart.org, and that'll be up on our website. Excuse me, in just a few moments. It's the Open Clip Art Library Project. They're at version 0.15 right now, which sounds like pretty brand new. Well, it is. But there are over 4,300 clip arts available for download by over 430 artists, and all available 100% free for use.
So you can use them and not have to worry about copyright?
Absolutely. It's actually it's the Creative Commons. It's in the public domain under the Creative Commons license. So you can use it anywhere you want, anytime you want, to do anything you want with it. 4,300 images.
Because what folks have to understand is, you know, a lot of folks will sit there and grab clip art, and it might actually be owned by somebody else. And if you use it in your display or your web page or something else, and you haven't gotten permission.
Especially these big clip art books you can buy, you know, 500,000 pieces of clip art. You know, they're all junk, except the one you like.
Right.
But, yeah, well, you have to look on their reuse certificates to see if you're allowed to use them in things that you publish.
Right. I've looked through this. I haven't looked through everything, and there is some junk in the clip art library as well. I mean, 4,300 artists. Some of it I don't agree, you know, is any good. But that doesn't mean that there isn't phenomenal stuff there, and it just means that some of it's not to my taste.
Exactly. Yeah. No.
But it's all public domain. It's all free for your use. You can download the entire huge package, which is about 90 megabytes. And or once you've done that, then every once in a while there's an update release with just the new stuff. So that's the currently only 28 meg. So, you know, if you go there every once in a while and look at the new
stuff. Yeah, it'll constantly refresh.
There's also an installer for Windows so that you can browse through the pictures, and there is a whole browser thing that goes with it. So there's an amazing amount of stuff that's available there. If you want to submit your own clip art, as long as it's unencumbered by the copyright process, you can do that. They let you do that. It's quite amazing. You can search for clip art based on keyword. That's a brand new feature. It's still in beta. It doesn't work 100% of the time. And you'll miss some stuff, so browsing through it is probably better. But I'll tell you what, it's quite amazing. It's quite an amazing thing. It's openclipart.org. And I know that a lot of you out there do newsletters of various sorts. You do for, you know, your organization or your whatever. And when you do that, you want to be able to stick clip art in the thing and make it look pretty. I also know that a lot of you are business people, and you do a lot of PowerPoint slides and things like that, and you
want
to
use clip
art there. I know a lot of you write web pages, and you want to put pictures in there. You have to worry nowadays in our litigious society. You have to worry about the fact that somebody's going to sue you for this. Pulling stuff out of the Open Clip Art Library is probably the safest thing you can do, and there's some amazing stuff in there.
Like a firewall. A brick wall on fire.
Yeah. But cool. There's some amazing stuff in there, so give it a look. It's openclipart.org, and it is our website of the week. We're going to take another quick break when we do. Thank you. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. I'll be here all week. Try the veal. When we come back, we've got Bob talking about an odd picture on his monitor. I can't imagine.
We've got really.
Ginny, whose computer loses sound. We've got another Bob who has a virus and can't get rid of it. And we'll be talking to all of you when we come back with Dave and Steve and Rob and Nick on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Four candidates. Computer talk that you can understand. Now back to Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I guess I must be Dave Enright.
You must be.
That makes me Steve Ray.
Somebody's got to be.
And I still have no idea who I am.
We've been calling you Rob Linton.
That's right. I'm Rob Linton.
It's as good a handle as any.
Yes.
He took the tags off. His mother used to pin the
note. I know.
By the way, she is going to be making you some more cookies.
We love
I know. She loves us.
Sweetheart.
See, after you brought her out and she actually met us.
We got to meet her at the, she saw that you guys, Greece Library. What a sweetheart.
Well, yeah. She said that you guys
were. What happened to you?
Huh? No, I don't know.
Your mom, like I say, she's a sweetie. But
what did she say about us? Wait a minute. She was going to say something nice about it.
No, she said, no, I can't say that on the air. It's
apparently
against the law.
Not. Oh, I see.
No, I'm just kidding. I told her about the rum balls, though.
Yeah.
And she goes, that's why you guys are a disaster when you have the rum balls on the air.
Yes.
I was eating about four or five of them, and that's it.
I had one rum ball. One.
Don't even lie. You had like three or four, and you were under the
table. Yeah, but the rum ball was seven inches around.
Yeah, but it was one rum ball. Look, if you're going to talk about diameter, that's a whole other story, but I'm talking about one rum ball.
One thing, though, we should thank all the folks that did come out, 2 weeks ago on Monday to see the Soundbites Roadshow. At the Greece Library. It was a lot of fun. I think we all had a great time.
You guys could have been there all night answering questions, and I think the library would have had to just let you stay
there.
There were more of us than there were them.
That's
so.
Right.
Yeah. Pat Lewis, who got us out there, sent us a real nice thank
Very
you note,
nice
which I'll bring in next week. But, I mean, we literally had a ball out there and just talking for folks, and it's like always, the time goes by so fast, and, you know, it's like we had to wrap it up. And that's why
great.
We like going out and meeting the people.
It was
and
great.
Having
we,
a
had,
good time.
We had a real nice time. We talked a lot about trends in the industry and interesting toys that are available. It was a really nice time.
Yeah. Well, and here's the deal with the Greece Library. If anybody's ever been in there before and seen that fish tank,
it's wonderful.
Unbelievable.
I'd love to have that fish tank.
It's a good thing I didn't notice it before because we
would have just been there all night.
Room. I just would have been there.
That's
you wouldn't have been able to drag me in.
And it's so set up down there. They've got the internet drops in all the tables. They've got outlets. I mean, you could just walk in and wireless. I mean, you know, you just we were all on our laptops
in
there.
Yeah, it's quite amazing. You can bring your laptop in, plug it right into a kiosk there.
Yeah.
That's not what they're called. Carols. Into the Carol. You can get wireless. You can do the whole thing. They're very high tech.
But like we were pointing out there, you know, I mean, the technology has changed so fast just in the past few years. I mean, I can remember as a kid going back to the library, and if you wanted to look up the book, you had to go over the card catalog. Mm-hmm. And a lot of folks don't even remember that. And it was on cards, and then you had to take that.
Before that, you asked a librarian who knew where every book was.
Oh, right. Yes.
And now you can sit there, look at it, a screen, and it'll not only tell you, you know, the topic you're looking for, it'll do a map and show you right mm-hmm. where the book should mm-hmm. be.
Yeah. It's kind of sad, though. For those of us who were library geeks, you know, we're no longer special.
Yeah.
You know, and I used to call librarians. If I had a question, I would call the library.
Yep.
I would ask them. Librarians would always either know the answer or look it up, and they were wonderful about that. I'm sure they're happy now that they don't have to do that stuff so much. Yeah. We all have the internet, but it was great. And in fact, one quick thing, my friend Tona Henderson, who teaches at RIT, she actually was a librarian, library science. It is the librarians who really know how to use the internet because they know how to do searches and stuff mm-hmm. like that, amazing things. We're going to go back to the phones now. Bob from Greece has an odd picture on his monitor. Bob, can you describe that picture legally on the air?
Don't get your hopes up, gentlemen.
Oh, darn.
No, that was poorly put on my part. Here's what I'm seeing. I'm looking at my Windows desktop screen right now. What I'm seeing is, it looks like I'm in a jail cell. I'm seeing four vertical yellow stripes that come from the very top of the screen right down to the very bottom. This appeared about a month ago, one afternoon when I was using the machine, and never had this before, and all of a sudden these yellow stripes are there.
And they're always there.
Pardon me?
And they're always there?
Yes. I don't believe it's the monitor, because when I first boot up and that first screen comes up, the Dell, it says Dell, there are no lines. It isn't until you get the welcome screen from Windows
until you get the graphics.
What's that?
Well, see, that first screen is not graphical.
Yeah.
It's later on that you get the graphics. Now, are these vertical stripes always there? Like when you open Word, they're still in front of it when
you
open it?
Yes, they're there constantly. And let me make it clear that they have no apparent effect on the operation of the computer or any of its functions.
Yeah, we already know what it is.
Oh.
It's the RAM in your video card.
Okay.
Either that, or have you tried a different monitor?
I haven't. I just, but...
Do you have another monitor in the house?
Well, it could be.
Well, I just got a liquid crystal display, Sony. They call it a display, and it can be used as a monitor.
I would plug it in, see what happens.
And I could plug that in and see what happens.
I think it might be part of the tube in the actual monitor that once it heats up and gets into the graphics mode, it's just like
It might be.
Steve, that kind of stuff, as soon as the welcome screen is there.
Yeah, those kind of lines you typically only see on LCDs. The CRTs usually don't do that.
Right. That's why I think it's probably the video RAM.
Yeah.
But he's got to do some homework.
But at any rate, if you replace that and it's still there, then it's definitely the RAM.
Video card.
If it goes away, then it was definitely the monitor. So that's where you need to start. And if it's the RAM, you're going to have to replace the video card. That's really kind of all there is to it. We're going to take another quick break back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Raver-Linton, and me, Nick Francesco, on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
WHITER Show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbites, and we have Ginny from Pittsburgh, who seems to have lost her sound. Welcome, Ginny.
Good morning. It's actually my neighbor. He's running.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
It's always, it's my neighbor.
Wink,
it's
wink,
a friend,
wink.
Right.
I'm calling for a friend.
I'm telling you the truth.
All right, we'll pretend to believe you. Go ahead.
He's running Windows 98, and apparently he downloaded an update from Microsoft.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, doesn't know which one it was, and doesn't have any sound anymore.
Microsoft stopped releasing updates for 98, didn't they?
Well, they still do some security.
Still
stuff.
Some of those hanging around.
You're going to have to be careful about that in the future, because the number of the updates for 98 have virtually stopped, so anything claiming to be an update may not be legitimate.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Unlike Windows XP, where you can do a rollback, what you might have to do is in Windows 98, you can go to accessories. And under System Tools, there's a restore point.
Okay.
And see if he can roll back to the previous day. Say he did this yesterday, or even say Friday. If the rollback date is available there for
Thursday.
Thursday, you can select that.
I see.
If it's there. If not, if he can boot up, mm-hmm. and you hit F8
right.
constantly, so you get to a... you know, a C
safe,
prompt?
The safe mode screen?
No, to what they call command prompt only.
Okay.
And you'll be sitting at a C prompt. And if he types in scanreg space /restore, what it's going to do is bring up this blue screen, and he's going to have different dates to select from. Because back in Windows 98, they saved the previous three good boot ups.
Mm-hmm.
So they could just select one of the other days that he knows it was done, he or she, before the problem started. Select that. It goes back and rolls back to that registry.
Now, be aware that if you do that, you lose everything you've done since then.
I see.
Any new programs.
Maybe an easier thing to try to begin with is update the driver to the sound card. Go to the website of the manufacturer of the sound card and see if they have an update.
What may have happened is you simply lost the sound driver through the update.
Oh.
Well, actually, before that, make sure the speakers are still plugged into the computer and powered on from the
right,
wall
make sure
outlet.
That the, you know, everybody says, well, I didn't do anything else, but make sure you didn't do anything else.
Yeah, when your feet are there under the desk kicking wires, you know, it's easy to accidentally kick something loose.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we did check those.
All right. So, yeah, definitely what you're going to want to do is reinstall the sound drivers. Either update them directly or actually remove the hardware and reinstall it and let the thing rediscover it again. Our next caller, Bob from Geneva, who seems to have a virus. Welcome, Bob.
Hi there.
What's up?
Well, I got a problem with my computer. Every time I boot it up, the firewall catches a Windows Explorer is trying to access the Internet, and it gives a destination number and everything. So I figured, well, it's got to be spyware of some sort. So I did the security tangle. I did the security tangle in safe mode.
What's the site that it's trying to get to?
Hurricane Electric is when I type in Google search.
Now, do you have antivirus software that's up to date?
Yes, I have a corporate edition of Symantec, mm-hmm. which it updates automatically and...
Well, Hurricane Electric is an internet service. Is that your internet service?
No. Nope. Mine is Roadrunner here in Geneva. And it keeps trying to get to this address, and then I go through the folders there.
That's not a virus, though. What you've got is spyware on there. One other program that I would suggest you try running, it's a program called CW Shredder.
I have that on there also.
The current version?
Yeah, that scans for specific spyware called the Cool Web Search, which isn't a cool web search.
Yeah.
It's spyware.
Yeah, I just downloaded it the other night and ran it, and I can't dump my temporary folder. There's a folder in there, an executable file that says cannot dump, copyrighted, or in use.
The other program, which if you don't have much experience with, is Hijack This.
Haven't played with that yet.
You can do it, and because it will make a backup of the stuff that you delete just in case you accidentally. But what it does is scan everything that's getting booted, and you can sort of go through there, and you'll see a number of them that are, you know, there, and they might be missing files or whatever.
Well, let's go back a step. He says he has a temp file that can't be deleted.
That spyware puts itself in
right.
there.
Right. Have you tried deleting it in safe mode?
One says copy, set up copy, read me, internet. Folder, which I can't delete. And then
try deleting it in safe mode so there's no other Windows drivers and theoretically no spyware trying to run. And that might help.
That's pretty much what you're going to have to do at this point. It's got to all be done in safe mode. We're going to take a break. The great Joan Hildebrand will be in to do the news. And on the other side of that, we'll be back with more interesting stuff on the greatest computer show in the known universe. We're going to have Dave Enright. We're going to have Steve Ray. We are going to have Rob Linton. And we're going to have me, Nick Francesco. We're going to have all of you. We're going to have more news and views and stuff you can use. I promise you, we will get to talking about Windows Vista when we come back, the new version of Windows.
Somebody called in and asked you to repeat the name of the website for the graphics that you were talking about. You want to do that quick?
OpenClipArt.org. It's also available on our website. If you go to soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y. And we'll be back on the other side of the news on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on News Radio 1180 WHAM. Get online now. Call 222-1180. The Choice One toll-free line at 1-800-295-1180 or star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I am Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbites. Now, we will get back to the phones. He just gave the numbers, but we'll get back to the phone shortly. Before we do, two things I want to talk about. I want to talk about what happens at our website, and I want to talk about Vista. I'm going to talk about Vista, whether you like it or not. We have a website at soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Every week we do a poll. Last week's poll was about Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince. I admit I participated in the Midnight Madness thing on that Friday night. And along with, you know, so much of America. 318 of you voted in the poll, making it number 93 in the all-time hit list.
Very nice. At the convention we went to last weekend, they kept announcing that over and over and over again. If you're reading the book, don't spill it for anyone else.
Yeah, right,
shut up.
Right. And it's going to be months before you really can. But over half of you couldn't care less about what happened.
I hear Harry turns out to be a wizard.
Apparently something happens. He's got glasses and things now and some sort of scar. Anyway, those who intend to read it, 17% of you. 26 people just clicked on the Macintosh because you could. 8% of you started. Only 17 of you had finished it by the time the poll was ended. I was one of them. This week's poll is about legality of software. That continues to be in the forefront of everybody's mind these days. And so the question is, how much of your software is legal? The choices are all of it, of course, most of it anyway, some of it more or less, I'm not saying, and the Macintosh. So far, 73 of you have voted, 74 of you have voted, 53% of you say all of it, 22% most of it, 9% some of it, 9% I'm not saying, and 5 of you clicked on the Macintosh. Certainly all of the, at least most of you Linux people would be able to click on all of it. Most of you Mac people would be able to click on all of it. So it's an interesting set of choices there. And once you're done clicking on the poll, underneath the poll, you'll see a little yellowish box. And one of the choices in that box is to click on us and give us your opinion. That will take you to my website, asknick.com.
That's asknick.com.
Thank you. Nice. And you can leave because I know that none of you out there like to just click on a choice. You need to say something, and so here you get to say something. So your opinion is most appreciated. Rob certainly did. Once you're there, check out.
It's the only enjoyment he gets during the show.
That's true. He's done now for the week.
I've got my instant messenger and my sound effects. I'm a happy man. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly right.
And my coffee.
You got your coffee. Yeah. And while you're at my website, asknick.com, you can check out the stuff that's in the list there and all the cool things that I've got. And then come back to our website at soundbites.org and check out the forums and all the lists. I've rearranged the website because apparently nobody could find anything. But now you can, because right next to the poll on the right, and it should work for all you Safari whiner, all you folks using KHTML, and the FAQs and I'm sorry. If every web browser on earth uses it, works with it, except the KHTML browsers, my thought is it's probably the KHTML that's bad. But that's okay. Yeah. I fixed it anyway.
But what you're talking about, though, is for the folks with the iPods. They were having problems. I was answering a bunch of messages.
Yeah, they didn't know where to find the feed for the iPod, for the podcast.
So we put it right on the front page, so you can't miss it.
At the top of the front page, there it is. It'll lead you right to the podcast, but you can also get to that, of course, from our archive site. The next biggest question is, where do we find the list of sites mentioned weekly on the show? That's the next link. And then the Security Tango and all the other cool stuff that's on there. So check that out. All of the links are right there. Hard to miss. And then underneath that, of course, there's the Soundbite store where you can buy things. And, of course, you can get to our forums, our great forums, where so far 46,000 messages from 2,200 users have been listed. So join us there where you'll find all kinds of other interesting, cool, and good stuff. And now, I don't care, I'm not going back to the phones yet. I'm going to talk about Vista.
And Vista is?
Vista is the new Windows version that's coming out.
We've all known it means chicken in Lithuania.
That's okay. Well, every word is going to mean something somewhere else. Lulu means pipe in Serbo-Croatian.
But the key question is?
It used to be Longhorn. It used to be Longhorn. Now it's going to be called Windows Vista. I got an email message from our friend Bob in Hawaii, and he says, contrary to popular opinion, Vista does not stand for viruses, infections, spyware, Trojans, and adware.
All right.
But what year is it coming out?
Amusing. Next year. The next version of Windows.
Always has, next year.
Right. The advertising tagline is clear, confident, connected, bringing clarity to your world. The first beta will be released somewhere around August 3rd. That will go to developers and IT professionals. A broader test release should be available in the middle of next year, and shipment of the final version is slated for 2007. The final release is the second half of next year. Then there's a server version for 2007. That won't be called Vista, however. That'll be called Windows Server 2007, most likely. The current one is 2003, and so 4 years later we'll have the next one.
See, that was always the interesting argument on naming your software. If you name it by year, then you know
how long it's been, and
how long it's been out, and do you have the current version or not.
But then
it looks old. You know, Windows 98, well, that's 7 years old
now.
Well,
but that's the point.
Yeah.
I mean, Microsoft would love you to get off Windows 98 because it's 7 years old.
Well, they've stopped support for it, too. Right.
Yeah, so a lot of us still call, you know, Windows XP is Windows 2002.
Right. Exactly. So it's been a while, but that's okay. Vista has three design. They went through, like, the whole focus group to pick the name Vista. Apparently that, you know, beat out things like spectacles and LASIK surgery. So it's kind of nice to know that. Vista's three design goals are better security. I don't know that you need the word better in there. New ways to organize information and seamless connectivity to external devices.
And I wonder how many things will screw up in this version. Moving things around, you get used to things in one version.
Right.
And then somebody comes up with...
That's okay. That keeps us busy.
Yeah, but, you know, if you learn where certain things are, like Explore. Windows Explore. Windows 98, it was right there off the main menu.
Yep.
Now somebody came up with a brainchild with, like, Windows ME and the rest of the versions. Oh, let's put it under accessories.
Right.
And you had to go hunting around to find it just so you could put a shortcut on the desktop.
Well, you're supposed to right-click on an icon and choose Explore.
Right. You're supposed to, yeah.
Because
they know better than you do. Speaking of stuff that they're going to change around, they've already dropped plans in Vista to include the new WinFS file system. They've also changed Indigo, which is the new web services architecture, and they've also changed Avalon, which is their new graphics engine.
That was supposed to make Longhorn cool.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's going to have lots of cool new features, like a searching mechanism. Thank heavens Microsoft is finally inventing that.
Sounds very familiar to Apple Spotlight.
Right. Yeah. There are some new laptop features to actually do things better on.
In other words, they take those three things out, and then they'll wait till it comes out, and then have you put this as a patch and have to pay for that separate.
Yeah, maybe. You never know. There's also going to be parental controls, which is a good thing.
You got easier home networking. Yeah, but you got that in XP now.
Well, you're going to have a little better. The important thing are going to be the visual changes. They're going to be translucent windows. Right. Those of us who have been using Linux for, things like GNOME and KDE are thinking, huh?
Mm-hmm.
And icons will now be, if you have a document and you look at the icon, it's actually a tiny representation of the actual document itself. Again, those of us who have been using GNOME for years are thinking, so we've had that since, what, 88 or something?
Yeah.
But that's all right. It's nice that that's going to come out now for the Windows people.
Yeah. Windows is finally catching up.
Exactly right. And so on the business side, they're going to make it easier to deploy on multiple PCs, and they're going to cut costs by reducing the number of times computers will have to be rebooted. I don't know how much it costs me to reboot my computer, but apparently Microsoft has figured that out and thinks they're going to save me
money.
Well,
it's lost productivity because you can't work while you're rebooting.
Yeah, well, that's an interesting question, and I'm going to talk about that after I give the numbers. If you're in the 585 area code, give us a call at 222-1180. If you're outside the 585 area code, please feel free to call us on the toll one, the choice one, toll free line at 800-295-1180. And if you're a Verizon Wireless customer, of course, star 1180 will get right to us. They talk a lot about productivity and things like that. And I was looking this week at things like TCO,
which is
total cost of ownership. You know, there's all kinds of ads out now about total cost of ownership for a system and what it costs to actually own it and how it's cheaper. TCO is cheaper under Windows than under Linux, so you should all go to Windows. First, that's bogus to begin with. But secondly, if you've, you know, I've only barely rubbed up against the concepts of business management by being in the College of Business. I'm not a business guy. But even I know that TCO is simply the payout part of the ROI equation, the return on investment. It's not what you pay for something, it's what you get out of it that's important. So, for example, if my total cost of ownership of one thing is $1,000, my total cost of ownership of something else is $10,000, if you only look at the total cost of ownership side, then the $1,000 thing is clearly better. But if the $1,000 thing doesn't give me any return on my investment, any benefit, then I've lost $1,000.
Yep.
If the $10,000 thing means $1 million coming into my company, which one is the better return on my investment?
Mm-hmm.
So it's not about the total cost of ownership in any way, shape, or form, and it's about investment. And the other hand, all these studies that talk about productivity, okay, they assume you're productive 24/7, or at least for the eight hours a day.
Yeah.
And that's, we all know that's not true. For example, I'm a salaried employee. I'm not hired to be sitting at my desk doing something for 8 hours a day. I'm hired to produce results.
If that result takes 12 hours a day,
that's what it takes. Yeah. And if it takes 2 hours a day, that's what it takes. Now, I have so many things I have to produce results on that I'm often at my desk 12 hours a day. But that's not the point. The point is, if I want to take a break for 10 minutes, 20 minutes, so what? I have a lunch hour. Is that non-productive time? Or am I just recharging my battery so I can be more productive later on in the day? And if you've hired somebody to produce a result, it doesn't matter. I say this to my guys all the time. I don't care if you do the job in an hour or 8 hours, as long as at the end of the day the job is done. That's what counts to me. I got to have this job done by this time frame. So get it done. So yeah. I don't worry about that. And I've said all along for 100 years, the internet is an amplifier. If you're a good worker, it makes you a better worker because you've got a lot of resources out there to work with.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a bad worker, it makes you a worse worker because you've got lots of places to...
Distractions.
Yeah. Let's just call them distractions. And that makes it easier to get rid of you because you become a bad employee. So I love the internet. I give the internet to everybody. Well, I already do, but I mean, I would. We're going to take a quick break now that I've finished ranting so that I can... So that I can calm down. When we come back, Gary wants to talk about networking. Ron wants to talk about his cursor, which looks funny. Maybe it's humorous. Maybe it's something interesting. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright and Steve Ray and Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, Gary, Ron, everybody on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Wham! Still 5 on Wham! Answering your computer questions for over 15 years. It's Soundbites with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbites. We're going to go to the phones now. Gary on a cell phone wants to talk about networking. Welcome, Gary. What's your question?
Well, I got two machines. I got a 98 machine and I have an XP machine. They're both coming off a Linksys router, DHCP, so they're both catching the same IP range and the same subnet.
Right.
But I have file and print sharing enabled on the 98 box, but I still can't find that computer from the XP box.
Are both of them within the same work group?
Yeah, that's the big problem.
Work group is named work group.
Yeah, in 98 the default was work group, and in XP the default is MS Home, so they won't see each other unless you change that.
Right, and I did change it on the XP. So
The other way you can try, if the network browser isn't working, because XP doesn't load the old NetBIOS protocol anymore. It only runs IP. So on your 98 machine, you have to have IP loaded, which it would be if you're getting internet services.
And also, this is for a friend of mine, and it's a new PC, and I'm thinking that maybe it's XP Home that's on there too, and that doesn't have the networking capability, right?
Yes, it does.
Yeah, it will not connect to a Microsoft server, Server 2003 or NT server.
So I can't join a domain with it. Okay.
Right. So what one of the ways around the NetBIOS browsing problem is you go to start run and backslash, which is the one above the return,
right.
And then the IP address of the other computer.
And then
it doesn't need to find what the NetBIOS name is.
One of the other things that 98 had an issue with, that if you go on the 98 machine and you go into the control panel under networking and you look at the properties, so where you've got the name of the machine and then it says work group. Now, if there's something underneath there called description and there's something in that, take it out.
That would confuse machines by putting a description in.
Yes, 98 had an issue with that. So if you erase that and then reboot the machine, then see if the XP box can see the 98 machine. For some reason, by putting something in that description, quite often, just mess things up.
All right, now I want to go back because we used a lot of jargon in that last answer.
Yep.
First, IP is Internet Protocol. That's the way things run over the Internet. When you type in www.soundbites.org, or in our case, you can also leave out the www and just type soundbites.org, that goes over HTTP, the Hypertext Transport Protocol that the web uses, but it also then goes over IP, the Internet Protocol. That's what gets it over the Internet. So that's what the two computers will need to talk to each other about.
Yeah, it's a form of communication.
NetBIOS was an old version of communication that only Windows ever used, and they dumped it because it didn't run well over the Internet. It didn't run well over long distances. DHCP is the Dynamic Host Configuration Protocol, like anybody cares, but what that means is when you get on the Internet, every device on the Internet has to have a unique number.
It's like your house address.
It's like your house address, and each one must be unique. Now, what happens is you can either set that manually in the machine, but if you do that, what happens if there's another one out there with the same number? There's a conflict and a problem. However, if you use DHCP, it's dynamic. It assigns you the next available address and remembers what that address is. So, for example, Soundbites actually has an address.
They just don't
see it. But we don't care what it is, because you type soundbites.org and it goes out to the domain servers.
64.177.228.149.
Didn't I say we don't care what that is?
If you do care.
If you do care, you can find it out. And so what happens is when you type in soundbites.org, it goes out and says, oh, that's that number, and then it can find it on the net.
Because it's a lot easier for people.
Deals with that.
It's a lot easier for people to remember names than numbers.
Right. If we had to remember the numbers, there are very few of us who could go to more than three websites without a big sheet of paper.
Well, like
and all this is configured in your computer automatically by your internet service, so you don't have
and
to worry
fact,
about it.
In fact, it's actually configured. Now, he has a router. He has his own router, which lets him connect multiple computers to one broadband connection. And that router is doing all that DHCP and IP translation and all that cool stuff. In the background, you don't have to know how to do it because it does it for itself.
And the only time you do need to know a little bit about it is when you're trying to make two machines talk to each other and not just talk to the Internet.
Yeah.
Right, which is why he needed to know this stuff now, because talking to the Internet is automatically configured. Talking to each other is harder. Now, that's one of the things that Vista is supposed to make easier, because home networking is, you do require a lot of technical knowledge to do home networking. And hopefully they'll have an easier...
Setting up folders that you actually want to share, whereas 98, you know, you just more or less stuck with...
Well, and that's, of course,
thing.
Another problem. If you're going to share folders among machines, you'd better be behind a firewall, because otherwise you've really opened them up to the Internet.
Yep.
Now, most routers nowadays have a firewall, so you're good to go there.
And there's a really nice technical reference dictionary website that we've talked about in the past, whatis.com.
Right.
And you can type in any of these acronyms or any jargon you don't know, and it has some really nice, concise definitions about what these things can mean.
Right. Okay, our next caller is Ron, who has a funny cursor.
Yeah, hi.
Hi, Ron. What's your question?
Great show.
Thank you.
I've been trying to download SpyBot from your website.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Security Tango, and every time I go to highlight it, the cursor turns into a straight line. And I can't download anything on your website. I'm trying to find out, is there some setting that I can change?
Can you download them anywhere else? Can you click on links?
I was going over to download.com, and it worked okay there.
Yeah, well, that's where eventually where it comes from anyway.
Right, nothing is actually downloaded from our website.
Yeah, we're just pointing to other places that do the downloads.
Okay.
So hold on. Let me get to the Security Tango here. And
yeah, because when you go to the Let's Dance part, scroll down, you click on the, say, SpyBot.
Okay.
You click on that. That actually takes you over to the SpyBot webpage or a place where you can actually download it. You're not downloading it from our page. We don't host it.
Okay, but why? I'm trying to understand why the cursor is turning into a line like that.
I don't know. That's a good question. Can you still click? Does it still take you there?
No, when I downloaded it from download.com, not from your website. I can't get anything on your website.
Well, my website doesn't do anything but take you to download.com.
But there are other things on there that I want.
So the question is, did you actually try clicking on the link on the Security Tango?
Yes.
And what happened when you clicked?
Well, like it does, one of the words says, at last, highlights blue, and that's it. And the cursor is just a line. And those little dots that I'm supposed to highlight.
You're talking about the Soundbites website?
Soundbites website or Security Tango website?
Security, where it says at last.
Nick Security Tango is online.
I can't highlight it.
Can you click on any of the other things on that page?
I'm sorry, what?
Can you click on any of the other things on that page?
No. I can't.
If you type securitytango.com into your web browser and just go there directly, does that work?
I haven't tried that.
Well, at long last is not a link. Your cursor should be a straight line because it's text.
What is your
You have to click on the green Security Tango.
What is your web browser?
Frontier.
Yeah, no, the web browser would be like Firefox or Internet Explorer.
No, I have Internet Explorer.
Do you know what version it is offhand? Because when you point to the at long last, your cursor should turn into a vertical line, and that's the text cursor to let you select text, to copy text if you're going to paste it somewhere else. Your cursor should turn into the little finger pointer to go to another link when you point to the green Security Tango text.
Okay, but when I was trying to get to Security Tango to get to dancing whatever, I couldn't get anywhere. That's what I'm saying. It just kept going into a line.
Yeah, something.
And then as soon as I get off to that little where it says at last Security Tango, it would go back into a pointer.
If you go to your Internet Explorer, click Help and click About, it should give you a version number. If that version number is less than 6, what version of Windows are you running?
XP Home.
You should have 6.
Yeah.
So I'm not quite sure, but this doesn't happen on any website other than the Soundbites website?
Just a Soundbite.
KHTML problem? No.
Well, it can't be because I'm in Internet Explorer right now. And
Have you ever installed a program called Bonsai Buddy or Cursor Manager?
No, nothing like that.
There are programs you can install that change your cursor into funny shapes, an hourglass shape instead of the watch cursor, for example.
But you should still be able to click on them.
Yeah.
One of the other things, though, have you done the updates lately to Windows XP?
Yes, I tried doing that this morning, and it came back to me and said there are no updates.
Now you're running Service Pack 2?
I guess so. One says Express, the other says Customize. And I went with the Customize, and I said Review and Install, and I clicked it. It did not show any scroll bar where it
showed
it was.
But that won't tell you what version you're running. If you click on Start, you go into the Control Panel and click on the icon that says System.
Okay.
What that'll do is open up a screen. Up on the right-hand side, left-hand side, you'll see the Windows logo. On the right-hand side, it'll tell you XP Home, and it'll tell you whether you're running Home, SP1, or SP2. And if you're not running SP2, that's where you might be getting all the updates. And if you're only on Service Pack 1, you might have to go up to SP2 and then get the additional patches and fixes.
I would try clearing your browser cache and your history because there's something weird in the way Internet Explorer is seeing those links instead of seeing them as a link. It's only seeing them as text. and that could be something stuck in your cache.
Yeah, yeah. And I would start with that. Clear the cache. You can do that pretty easily, and then go from there.
I'm raising my hand because I have a couple questions.
You may ask them.
You guys use some terms there that some people may not be familiar with.
Yes.
First of all, what's cache?
The cache. Well, here's the interesting
that's
thing.
That's something I'm short on usually
right.
every week.
Yeah. Here's the interesting thing about that. When you go to any site on the internet, the first thing your web browser does is download it to your computer. All the text, all the graphics, all the links, all the everything.
All the info.
What it does is then it takes that page and marks it with a date and time. Now, the next time you go to load that page, the first thing it does is instead of going to load the page, it looks in the cache and says, oh, I downloaded this page on July 5th at 3 p.m.
So I have it already.
It goes out to the website and
right.
says, when was the last time you updated? Oh, July 4th at 2 p.m. I don't have to load it from you. I got it.
It was originally intended for dial-up users who have a slow connection.
Yeah, right.
So it doesn't have to download everything again if it's already downloaded.
Right. The problem with that is that one of the things it downloads is JavaScript and keeps that in your cache. If you've got something from a website that downloaded a JavaScript that's not so good, you need to get rid of that JavaScript in the cache before you can move on. Now, of course, you can just find that file and delete it, but that's kind of silly when it's
yeah.
just much easier to simply delete the cache. And the way you do that in Internet Explorer is go to the Tools menu, select Internet Options. There's a box under – make sure you've got the General tab selected. You've got three boxes there, Homepage, Temporary Internet Files, and History. Under Temporary Internet Files, you can say Delete Files. Click Delete Files. It says this deletes all the files in the temporary internet files.
Check the little box.
Check the little box that says delete all offline content. Click OK and wait.
See, one of the big problems is that if your cache is set too high, and in that box there's a setting on how much cache you can keep. If your cache is set too high, it takes longer to search the cache than it would to download the file to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
So for especially for people on broadband, you can set your cache to like 1 meg or even less because you want to download the latest thing anyway.
So fast anyways. I mean,
and you're
yeah.
on such a fast
right.
connection.
For broadband, it doesn't matter.
So you don't have to worry about your cache filling up or clogging up with junk that may make your browser not work right.
Right. And that does mean the trade-off is that every time now, once you've cleared your cache, when you go places, you're going to have to re-download those pictures and things.
But
so
on broadband,
dial-up, that's
yeah.
so what.
And your browser does that automatically. It's not something you have to worry about.
Right. It'll just happen. It'll just happen automatically. If you're a Firefox user, Tools, Options, and from there you can delete your cache from Advanced. So it's pretty easy to do.
Now, for people listening to us for the first time, they keep hearing you refer to Security Tango. We heard it at the Grease Library, I think. What is Security Tango, and why should people go to that website? Will you tell me again, because I think I forgot.
Okay, I'll tell you because you did forget.
Yes.
Here's the deal. For years, we were telling people, here's how you clear out your stuff. Here's when you have a virus. This is the series of steps you take.
If your computer's acting funny, sluggish, slowing down.
Right. It just something weird is going
on. Doing
things
weird things.
First thing you want to do is check for viruses and Trojan horses and adware. So we originally were telling people this over and over and over. And we started to remind people, because people would say, well, I skipped that step because they didn't know what it meant. So we started calling it a tango. It's like dancing a tango because if you skip a step, it's not a tango anymore.
You're stumbling
it's just a
over
mess.
Each other.
So we started calling it the Security Tango. And one day I realized, I can't say this one more time. I can't do this one more time. So I got securitytango.com, which is a website you can go to, and we put all of the security stuff here. I started with there's a home page that talks about what's available. There's a definitions page that talks about what a backdoor is and what a Trojan is and what an engine is and a keystroke longer and all that stuff. The important button is the Let's Dance button, which gives you a step-by-step guide. Start with the very first step. Go all the way through. I created it. The great Bill Bateman made a bunch of changes. The incredible Lori Lynch made some extra changes and did some add-on stuff. So it's all available. It's a joint project that we all put together. And if you follow it step by step, dancing the tango without skipping any steps, it will clear out 99% of the stuff on your machine.
And unfortunately,
SecurityTango.com.
Unfortunately, this is a fairly necessary step if you're using Windows.
You need to do it regularly.
It looks
we'll
long
more
and complicated.
When we come back on the other side of the news with Dave, Steve, Rob, me, Nick on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Whams, from PCs to Macs, these guys can answer your questions. Back to more Soundbites on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbites. We're going to get to Gary from Lockport, who's looking for MP3 players. But before we do that, a little bit more about the Security Tango, because I kind of rushed myself. Again, I really want to thank Bill Bateman. Particularly Lori Lynch, who Bill helped recreate everything. He did great. He did great with that. And now Lori has, for once you've done the Security Tango as it is on the website, to redo it over and over and over again is a slightly different process. And Lori has, if you email her, she'll send you that file.
And she's been sending it out left and right all over. Matter of fact, I believe she is doing to a couple of folks in even Hawaii.
Yeah. Sure, and it goes all over.
Yeah,
it is a fairly long and complex process, but unfortunately that's necessary with Windows. You can minimize the problem a little bit of spyware and malware, malicious software, by not using Internet Explorer and Outlook Express.
Mm-hmm.
And that's mentioned.
Reduce
on,
it greatly.
On, right, that's mentioned on the Security Tango page. Don't use Outlook Express or Internet Explorer. Use Mozilla and Mozilla Firefox, Mozilla Thunderbird.
Right.
Are other programs that do the same thing. And that can go back to the step about people may not even know what software they're running. If you click on a big blue E to get on the web or the Internet, then you're using Internet Explorer and are opening yourself to risk.
And you can do the same thing with Firefox or any of the others that we've suggested just as easily as you can with that big blue E.
Yep.
And the thing that is, though, is you don't get the pop-ups. And everything else.
I haven't seen a pop-up in I can't say how long.
And Thunderbird will even, when you're installing it, ask you, are you using another email program?
And would you like to import the mail?
And it brings everything over, so you don't have to worry about redoing your contact list or recreating all those emails or copying them over. It does it automatically for you. So instead of clicking on Outlook Express, you just click on Thunderbird.
My Eudora died. I've been using Eudora since like 1930.
Was it painful?
And Eudora is another email program.
And it finally died. I've got years worth of Eudora in there. And what happened was it died somewhere. There was a badly formed email, obviously a virus or a spyware or something. It came in. I couldn't figure out where it was. I couldn't find it. I figured, you know, the heck with it. I loaded up Thunderbird, said import all my mail. It imported everything, including a couple of new messages that I'd never seen before that ended up in the trash, which clearly were the malformed ones. So I just did that, and it worked out pretty well.
And then what you can do is, so this is used as a lot of troubleshooting tips, too. Then you can install a new version of Eudora and have it load the mail back from Thunderbird.
It could, but I haven't even bothered with that. I love Thunderbird.
Yep.
Thunderbird only has two features that I really want, and both of them are going to be available in the next version, so I'm getting much happier.
Yeah, so you're not limited to the big blue E that came with your Windows computer. There are better browsers that have less risk of getting junk in your computer.
Hello, it's right here. It's a little, see it? Isn't that it? Oh, no, I guess not.
No, you guys are going to kill me. I left the burner part at home again.
Okay, then. There's no point in doing anything.
You can try emailing it to yourself this time.
I'm going to do it right now.
Yeah.
What the heck was I telling? Oh, yeah, browsers. I am the head of technical support for the College of Business at RIT. And one of the decisions we made a while ago was to make Firefox our default web browser. And main Windows support guy is thrilled because there are many fewer problems, many fewer support calls, many fewer everythings for that. So it's a very nice product. Very nice product. If you get a chance to run it.
And that goes back to your total cost of ownership.
Exactly.
Rant, that if your computer goes down every couple of days because you got the latest virus or the latest spy program, you can't use your computer, you can't do your work.
Right.
So by not having those problems, it makes your computer worth more because you're not spending money to fix it.
Right. And I'll tell you what, I have to put in my plug. I'm running Linux as my main desktop at work. And it started out because mainly I was having so many problems with checking other people's stuff. I had to keep going over to a Linux box, So I started using it as my main machine. I'm in love. I never get a virus. I never get a problem. Everything works super fast, super clean. And updating my entire system, not just the operating system, but every application, is two commands. Aptitude update, aptitude upgrade. I have the latest of everything running all the time on my system. I'm just in love. It's great. It's great. But to get back to the Security Tango, that's at securitytango.com. And if you run that regularly, anytime your system feels like it's slow, anytime your system, you know, weird things start happening, we don't need to mention that anymore as a thing to try, but you should do that. When we come back, we really do have Gary from Lockport on the phone, and we'll be answering his question about MP3 players, looks like for the multimedia computer. When we come back with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, Gary from Lockport, and all of you on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
When they say it, answering your computer questions for over 15 years, it's Soundbites with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbites. Our next caller, and I promised I'd get to you, Gary. It's Gary from Lockport. Welcome. What's your question?
Yes, I'm still here. Besides the Apple products, what would most of the majority of the MP3 players out there do not list a Mac as a system requirement? Is this really necessary?
Depending on how automatic you want it to be. You can use pretty much any MP3 player with the Mac. You just have to copy the songs to it manually.
Okay.
With the Apple iPod and Apple iTunes, you plug in your iPod and it copies the songs for you automatically.
Oh, okay. So
there's a little more intervention with the other systems.
And this would be spelled out for me on the Mac itself somewhere that
no.
I can do it? No.
No, you have to know how to do it manually or have someone show you how to do it manually.
Oh, okay.
It's interesting that the actual iPod device itself has a 70% market share, even on Windows. It's the most popular MP3 player for Windows as well. And the iTunes Music Store, which is one of the biggest places to buy music legally on the Internet, has an 80% market share. And that's even after Creative released their new Zen line a few months ago. Sony now has a legal music store. Napster has a legal music store. So In the midst of extra competition for Apple, the Apple products are still the market leaders for both the player itself and the music store.
Yeah, it's just confusing out there.
There
are a lot of them. Certainly the iPod, because of its ease of use, because of its ability to do so many things, is phenomenal. It's a phenomenal product, but there are many, many, many others. And one place you can read about them is at mp3.com. That's mp3.com. Steve will put that up on the list. mp3.com is a site that has lots of different things on it. You can buy digital music. You can do all kinds of things. But one of the things they have is a list of all of the various MP3 players and which ones you can buy.
There's also one, mp3-mac.com, that has alternatives specifically for the Macintosh.
Right. And you know what? You need an MP3 player because not only do you get to listen to this show live, but we do have a podcast available to you. It's at SB Arch. It's at our archive site. But you can link right to that feed from our website, soundbites.org.
You don't have to be using an iPod or iTunes to listen to the feed. You can use any podcasting program on any computer.
Yeah. Right. It doesn't even have to be a podcast. You can go right to the archive server at sbarch.cob.rit.edu, and you can download any one of our shows directly and listen to it directly through your speakers or whatever, or upload it from there to a non-iPod MP3 player. There's a million ways to continue to catch sound bites. However, you're done catching it live for another week. We are done. I want to thank everybody who called in, and I want to apologize to everybody to whom we did not get. We'll call in earlier next week. I don't really know what else to tell you. We're delighted to come here every week here on WHAM. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray. I want to thank Rob Linton. I'm Nick Francesco. Don't forget to dance the Security Tango at securitytango.com. Join us. Answer the poll at soundbites.org. Check out the opinions at asknick.com. That's asknick.com. We will be back. Man, you can't get past them. We will be back here next week at 11 a.m. on Soundbites. And where will you hear that? You know where it is. It's 1180 WHAM. Thanks, everybody, and so long.
Hey, John.